In this present crisis, government is not the solution to our problem. Government is the problem.
This is the I Spy Radio Show.
You and I have a rendezvous with destiny.
Keeping an eye on big government.
We the people tell the government what to do. It doesn't tell us.
The trouble with our liberal friends is not that they're ignorant. It's just that they know so much that isn't so.
And now, here is your host, Mark Anderson.
And welcome. So glad you're joining us as we launch year number 7 here on the iSpy Radio Show. Who'd have thought it? Back in 2011, when we got started, there were a lot of things we'd probably never have thought, including a President Trump. And while back then I probably wouldn't have thought that, I am glad that we're just a mere 2 weeks from him taking office. Looking back now, it is unimaginable to think what a Hillary presidency would be bringing. A generation of the farthest left judges on the Supreme Court for sure, expansion of the American slavery through Obamacare, and much worse. But there are 2 weeks left, and that means Obama can still do a lot of damage. He's already taken 1.3 million acres from Utah and another 300,000 from Nevada just in the last week. Is Oregon next? But can these executive actions to grab lands from the states to which the lands rightfully belong, can these actions be undone, or will it mean years of fighting? We'll talk about the land grab with Representative Ken Ivory from Utah. And look out, the Russians are coming. All this week, there's been a breathless fury over alleged Russian hacking. If you listen to the embarrassing Senate Intelligence hearing, Senate Intelligence, an oxymoron if ever there was one, with a special emphasis on moron, you heard a lot of finger-pointing without substance. It reminded me of a prosecutor who is trying to paint guilt on a defendant, despite no evidence, no body, no murder weapon. Maybe more information will come out with this report that they're supposed to be releasing to the public on Monday, although some details have already been leaked to the press. I guess that just proves the Russians have hacked the CIA, and the Russians are trying to influence the report that is trying to show the Russians tried to influence our elections. We'll talk about that with Kevin Freeman, and how do we get political influences out of our intelligence agencies. First up, though, I'd like to welcome Representative Ken Ivory back to the show and to kick off the new year. Ken Ivory is a Republican member of the Utah House of Representatives. Ken is also a strong supporter of states' rights and has frequently advocated for Utah and all states to gain control of federal lands within their borders. Ken, welcome back to the show.
Mark, it's my pleasure. Always good to be with you.
Yeah, and a happy new year to you. I hope that you're expecting good things the coming year.
Yeah, we've got a lot of work ahead. What we're seeing on the midnight workings of the president on the way out the door. He's given us a lot of work to do.
Yeah, he sure has. And on his way out the door, Obama just did what I would consider a huge overreach of executive power. According to the Wall Street Journal, on December 20th, the White House announced the withdrawal of millions of acres of Atlantic and Arctic territory from petroleum development. And then this week, Mr. Obama proclaimed 1.35 million acres in Utah, known as the Bears Ears National Monument, and 300,000 acres in Nevada to be new national monuments. So that means the federal government now owns about 50% of the land west of the Mississippi and 80% of the land in Nevada. According to news reports, you guys in Utah had no idea this was coming. Is that correct?
Well, they've been rumbling about it and threatening, and we knew that they were threatening to do this. And so there was actually a press conference the week before, the governor and lieutenant governor, attorney general, congressional delegation, House and Senate members did a press conference saying, don't do this. And significantly, Mark, in fact, I'll send you a link. Maybe you can link it to the show.
Sure.
Rebecca Benally, Native American county commissioner in San Juan County, where this is ground zero for the monument. She says, President, federal government doesn't keep its promises. Don't do this to our people. This will devastate our people and our sacred lands and our ability to use the land. Don't do this to our people. And, you know, 1.35 million acres in Utah marks significantly. Think about this. So there's 66% of the land in Utah is still federally controlled. They've never kept the original statehood promise with Utah that is the same, exact same statehood promise of all states east of the Rockies to relinquish land at statehood. They didn't do it with Oregon, all the western states. So there's this federally controlled land. In addition to the federally controlled land they locked up, Mark, President Obama with his pen seized 109,000 acres that belonged to the school children of Utah. Not federal land. Not anything to do with federal land. This is land that generates income for the state of Utah, which, by the way, is already the lowest per pupil funding in the nation because 66% of our land is federally controlled and the federal government doesn't pay property tax.
Yeah, and that's important to remember, too, because so much of that land was originally designed to be transferred to the states, I mean, and as part of their coming into the union, but also a lot of those lands were designed, as you say, to provide funding for things like schools.
Yeah, I mean, all states east of the Rockies, they have the ability to generate property tax, and schools are largely funded through property tax. Well, in the western states, we have the hardest time funding education. This is just literally taking education funding right out of the mouths of our school children in the West, and President Obama just added insult to injury and stole. I mean, there's no way else to say it. Stole 109,000 acres of land that's owned by the school children of Utah.
Hmm. So why this particular land? I mean, it's not like we don't have enough federal monuments already.
No, that's right. That's right. Well, you've got some of the extreme environmentalist groups that want to lock up everything they can lock up. Mark, I mean, when you say why, you go back to, I always like to start with principles. In governing power, there's a principle of feudalism and a principle of freedom, and they're not compatible at all. There are those who want to perpetuate a feudalistic system, and they know that property is the very essence of our liberty and our self-governance. A great quote. George Sutherland is the only member of the U.S. Supreme Court from Utah back in the early 1900s, and he said this. He said, "Man has three great rights, and they're so bound together as to be a single right. If you give a man his life, but you take away his liberty, you take away all that makes life worth living. If you give a man his liberty, but you take from him the property, which is the fruit and the badge of his liberty, you still leave him a slave."
Hmm.
Property is the master right because it's the very expression of our creative genius, right? If you think about in America, this creative genius, all of the songs haven't been written, all of the movies haven't been produced, all of the art hasn't been done, all of the buildings haven't been built. We are creative by nature. Well, to create, of course, you have to have your life. You have to have the ability to choose and act and pursue your destiny, and you have to have means with which to do that.
That's right.
By that, you create wealth. You create aesthetic wealth. You create financial wealth. You create charitable wealth. Government does not create wealth. They can only take it away. Reagan said, as government expands, liberty contracts. And this is fundamental to our system. So with the federal government controlling 50% of all land in the West, one-third of the entire land mass of the United States, we have a part feudalistic, socialistic system, and you can't have, you know, part.
No.
You either believe in freedom and property or you don't, and
that's
apparently
right.
In the United States today, we do not. We haven't gotten there yet.
No, we sure haven't, unfortunately. But we have arrived at our break here, so let's go ahead and do that. We'll have lots more with Ken Ivory. Don't go anywhere. And welcome back to the iSpy Radio Show. Talking today to Representative Ken Ivory. I'm sure that you're familiar with him. He's a frequent guest here on the iSpy Radio Show. He's also a representative there in the Utah House of Representatives, and he is a big supporter of states' rights, and especially about the return of federal lands to the states. So going into the break there, we were talking about some of these fundamental issues, and it really does seem like those in power have forgotten that they are operating at the will of the people and not the other way around. It just seems like they seem to think that they have this unlimited power and can do whatever they want. And really, our system, to me anyway, was designed so that if anyone's doing the fearing and trembling, it's the government. But we seem to have totally reversed that now.
Yeah, exactly right, Mark. I've been thinking a lot about that, as a matter of fact, in light of all of this. Think about how our nation was founded. Fiercely self-governing people. They went and discovered this lost land. They lived there by themselves for generation after generation after generation, and all of a sudden King George said, "I need to come rule over these people and control them." And they said, no, we govern ourselves. Liberty is essential. And so much so that they fought an improbable battle and won to secure the blessings of liberty. And then they devised a system, and they said, we know that if governing power is centralized, we'll lose our liberty and our ability to govern ourselves. And so the first thing we're going to do is divide governing power. We're going to divide it between state and national government, and then we're going to subdivide governing power between branches of government and a whole number of other things. But these two great divisions between state and national, and they delegated few and defined powers to the national government and numerous and indefinite powers to the state government. Think about it like two wheels on a bicycle. Well, imagine that the front tire of the bicycle now is so bloated, it's about to explode, and the back tire is so flat, it's about to chew the rubber right off the rim. Well, the answer is not a new rider, and the answer is not does the bike go to the right or to the left. The answer is fix the system. And what they did in the Constitution is they said, state legislatures, you are the sure guardians of the people's liberty. That was James Madison introducing the Bill of Rights using Article 5 of the Constitution in the first Congress. They gave the states the Article 5 power to say, you are the maintenance engineers of this system. If it ever gets out of balance, George Washington said, if the distribution or modification of constitutional powers between those two spheres is ever in any particular wrong, let it be changed by an amendment in the way the Constitution designates. But let there be no change by usurpation. Don't let the federal government just take it. He said, that's the way free government is destroyed. And so this falls right back to our state legislatures. The first official act they take is to swear an oath to uphold the U.S. Constitution, and the power they have right there is Article 5, Convention of States, to restore that balance. I mean, Mark, think about if you have kids and you go and say, hey, did you make your bed today? And they say, well, I didn't know I was supposed to make my bed. If you don't have constitutional clarity, if you don't have clarity on the expectation, there's no way to discipline.
Yeah.
We don't have constitutional clarity. We've allowed that to erode for 100 years. We've got to get back. There's a great movement now. In fact, Mark, in late September last year, there was the first ever simulated convention of states held in Williamsburg, Virginia, historic Williamsburg. Delegates, commissioners from all over the United States, there were three of them from Oregon. Derek Kitts was one. I should remember the others. But they elected me to be the president of this simulated convention of states, and we debated how would we amend the Constitution to rein in the federal government and restore that balance and get those tires in the right tire pressure again. This movement is happening. There are millions of people around the United States now that have joined into this to say, we have the constitutional power to restore this balance so that we don't have Obama with a pen locking up millions of acres like King George did.
Yeah, there was a... takes us a little bit farther afield here, but there was actually a really great spoof video about these liberals that are suddenly waking up to the fact that they don't like the idea that so much power resides with the president. And they really think that now's the time that we need to do away with these executive orders. It was funny, but you know, it's always what we see, and I think our founding fathers really saw this, is that, you know, people, when they get power, they want more of it, and they have a tendency to abuse it. And we have seen the federal government grab more and more and more power. Certainly, one of the chippings away of that on the stone of freedom there was this Antiquities Act of 1906, and this was mentioned in a Wall Street Journal article, and it really opened the door to Teddy Roosevelt starting to this massive land grab. And of course, we saw that then roll out in the early 1900s on up through the 30s, where they were just, you know, the federal land was just the federal government was grabbing all of this land. Talk to us a little bit about that act, and I know that its original purpose was to protect scientific and historic areas, not necessarily scenic, though, as I understand it.
Yeah, that's right. So, 2 points to that. Number one, imagine, Mark, that I come up and, you know, hey, I'm a government official, and I say, Mark, I'm gonna give your neighbor the power to sell your home.
Yeah,
because I'm the government. And so I'm gonna pass a law that says your neighbor can sell your home. Okay, do I have the power to do that? Well, of course not. Congress passes this Antiquities Act to do something that Congress doesn't have the power to do.
Hmm.
It's not in the Constitution. Where in the Constitution did it say protect historic scientific relics and lock up land? It doesn't. It's not there. So Congress does this bill that says we're gonna give the president power to do something we don't have the power to do. First major problem. Then if you look at the terms of the act itself, it says, to, as you mentioned, historic and scientific relics, but the smallest area compatible with protecting those areas, 1.35 million acres.
Yeah.
And 20 years ago, President Clinton, with his pen, locked up 1.9 million acres in southern Utah in the Grand Staircase Escalante Monument. they hadn't talked to a single soul in Utah before President Clinton standing on the south rim of the Grand Canyon, locked up 1.9 million acres and marked $2 trillion worth of the world's cleanest burning coal reserves. Mm-hmm. Garfield County today, 20 years later, last year they just declared an economic state of emergency. Wow. Because the timber industry has died, the mining industry is dying, the grazing and ranching industry is dying, the families are leaving, the schools are now closing, and the school district came to them and said, we're going to have to close schools, and they declared an economic state of emergency. And that is the fallout undermining the basic American recipe of protect people in their life, their liberty, their property, let them govern themselves and produce wealth.
Or in this case, allowing another state to declare another state to be locked up. Let's take a break right there. Everyone stay with us. Have lots more with Ken Ivory. Coming up, we're going to be talking about whether or not this can be undone.
Get a little intelligence on big government. You're listening to the iSpy Radio Show.
And welcome back to the iSpy Radio Show. Talking today to Ken Ivory. He's a Republican member of the Utah House of Representatives and a strong supporter of states' rights. You probably know him best for his appearances here on the iSpy Radio Show, but also because he's been a frequent advocate to return federal lands to state control and honor the promise, keep the promise. And so, Ken, going into the break there, we were talking about the Antiquities Act of 1906, and its purpose was essentially to allow the federal government to grab land that it shouldn't have constitutionally had a right to. So why hasn't the Supreme Court ruled that unconstitutional?
Well, a number of reasons. I mean, I don't know that we have direct cases that have attacked it on the right basis where you've had states step up. Sadly, well, I'll give you an example on this Grand Staircase Escalante monument. They did the 1.9 million acres in 1996, locked up all kinds of school trust lands, and our governor at the time filed a lawsuit, but then settled for $50 million.
Hmm.
I mean, $2 trillion worth of the world's cleanest burning coal, and he settled the case for $50 million. I can't speak to why and how and what, but I think we generally have this sense of, we want to be partners. We want to work with this governing partnership with our federal government. We want to believe that they have our best interest at heart. But I'll tell you, you ask it, county commissioners throughout the world, the rural West, what their number one export is from their counties. You know what they'll tell you, Mark?
What's
our
that?
Children.
Our
children.
Boy, how sad.
Our children. Communities are dying all over the West. What sane nation burns up tens of millions of acres of its forest, pollutes the air, kills animals, decimates watershed, leaves schools underfunded and devastated, and leaves communities dead and dying rather than have a healthy and productive forest? What sane nation has more rare earth elements than the rest of the world locked up in these federal lands, and yet 95% of the rare earth elements now we get from China to keep our military alive, to keep planes in the air and ships on the water and electronics going? What sane nation has more recoverable oil than the rest of the world combined and yet is dependent on foreign nation for energy that is the master resource that runs everything?
Yeah.
It makes no sense, except if you go to, there are people that perhaps don't want our nation to thrive, or at least they've been deceived in a way. And that's where you've got to get back to the system. The system was designed to divide government so that the voice of the people is larger and the role and the pen of the federal government is in its small little box.
Right.
And we have to get back to that.
Yeah, and so getting back to that, does that mean then that these designations by Obama can be undone and undone easily?
Well, that's a question, right? So people in Washington are dithering about whether President Trump can undo the monument, or can he only reduce the monument? And so to say that President Obama takes an act that is unconstitutional, that has no consent of the people that are affected, and they're dithering over whether or not Trump can undo it. My experience in Washington is once they've rung a bell, it's hard to unring it from Washington, because it's just such the inertia of sucking up power so they can do favors, so they can get more money, so they can get reelected, so they can grow more power, so they can do more favors. And it's just that negative cycle, which is why we have a $20 trillion debt and tens of thousands of pages of regulation churning out, and Congress immobilized, and an administrative agency that's out of control. This is where, for example, the remedy in the Constitution is convention of states. The states are supposed to be the ultimate check. Again, Madison said the state legislatures are the sure guardians of the people's liberty. He said, introducing the Bill of Rights, the state legislatures will resist every assumption of power by the federal government better than any power on earth can do, because sure guardians.
Yeah, which they should. In terms of that Antiquities Act of 1906, I mean, it was originally designed, from what I understand, to be pretty narrow in scope. And there does appear to be some precedent for undoing a previous president appointment to some of these federal lands. For example, in 2001, George W. Bush reversed Bill Clinton's withdrawal of 50 million acres of seabed from exploration. So that would seem to be an indication of precedent. So what are your thoughts on that? Can this be undone, in your opinion?
Well, we hope. We hope. We're petitioning the president. I actually have a resolution file open to express the consent of the Utah legislature, to express the Utah legislature's will that it be undone. But Washington is Washington, right? The founders knew that if we didn't divide power, and if the states didn't step up and draw those lines, you don't have those clear expectations to enforce. And so at the state level, I'll give you an example. This simulated convention of states, we did one of the proposed amendments that came out of that was 3/5 of the states can abrogate any executive order, agency action, legislation from Congress.
Yeah. Well, I would certainly hope that if there's a way to do it, Trump will find a way to do it, because rules that are issued in pens and phone are not set in stone. And we'll certainly hope that he has the will and the ability to do that. And I certainly know that he'll get your support for doing that, too. So, Ken, I want to thank you so much for your time today.
Hey, Mark, it's my pleasure. Always good to be with you.
All right, and continue the good fight there to help states regain control of their land. Coming up next, Kevin Freeman talking about the Russians are coming. And welcome back to the iSpy Radio Show, helping you get a little more intelligence on big government. And we're talking now with Kevin Freeman. He is one of the world's leading experts on financial terrorism and economic warfare. And we'd like to get his thoughts on matters of cybersecurity as well. In the news, of course, this week is the continuing assertions that Russia was hacking into our elections. And so we want to get his feedback on all of that, because he is a consultant to many federal, state, and local agencies. So, Kevin, it's good to have you back, and Happy New Year to you.
Thank you. Happy New Year.
Yeah, and you got some exciting events coming up on your end there with your family. You're going to be heading back to D.C. for the inaugural address there and some of those balls. That sounds exceptionally exciting.
Well, yeah, I'm looking forward to it. Should be fun.
Yeah. So we've had this week a hearing in the Senate. They were talking about the Russian hack there. And one senator, I forget exactly which one it was, said that we know for certain that Russians interfered with our elections. So, okay, if that's true, what do we know they did?
Well, here are some things that we know for certain. We know for certain that the United States has also interfered in other nations' elections at various points, whether we fund or support candidates, whether we put propaganda out. I mean, this is a part of international statecraft. So that's just a fact, and it's something that the United States has done and Russia has done. So we know that, and we know that in the Ukrainian election there was a United States push, and that upset Putin because our side won, and we saw the reaction. We also know that the Russians hack things, and they did very likely hack the DNC and Podesta and all of the different hackings that have come out, including they likely hacked Secretary Clinton's private email server. They hack things. That's a fact. So do the Chinese. And we know that hacking took place. What we do not know with certainty is that they took the information that they obtained from the hack and used it to issue off to WikiLeaks, or used it to try and influence the election. We don't know that with certainty.
In terms of these kinds of hacks, whether it's us doing the hacking or the Russians doing the hacking and whatnot, how much of it that is an actual attempt to interfere with an election versus just trying to hack into systems to find out what's really going on in order to have some sort of advance warning of the likely outcome of an election. So that way, you know, you can be better prepared, you know, from the State Department standpoint and know how to handle incoming newly elected officials and whatnot.
Well, it could be that, or it could be to prepare embarrassing information that could be used to leak on the internet or to manipulate decisions and other outcomes. I mean, there are a whole host of reasons you would hack something. We don't know what the motive was. We just know that the Russians are very active in hacking. But there is this whole narrative that has been developed around this by the outgoing president and his team that Russia hacked the election. And that's a far stretch. Russia hacked information from the Democrat National Committee, no doubt, but that does not mean they hacked the election. There's no evidence that they hacked into any of the voting machines. There's no evidence that they tried to manipulate the election to that degree. Now, did they take information and use it? Yes, and that's what nation states do. Whether that's right or wrong, I won't comment, but we do it. Russia does it, China does it, and so forth. We do obtain information, and we use it to further the interests of the United States. I'd be disappointed if our government did not obtain information and use it to further our interests.
Well, the entirety of the claim, and you touched on this, is that it boils down to they're asserting that the Russians were the ones that did, in fact, hack into the DNC, did get John Podesta to hack, to click on that link of his, the phishing exploit there, and then release these bad things that the Democrats were saying and doing, and apparently handing all of that to WikiLeaks. So, but of course, WikiLeaks is saying the opposite. They're saying this wasn't a Russian operation. It wasn't anybody working at the state level. In other words, a state, not necessarily Russia. But is there evidence that the Russians did, in fact, hack into the DNC and did, in fact, or were the ones behind the Podesta leak?
There is information that they've hacked into the DNC. I have not seen the specifics of it, but I know with confidence that they've looked at it. But they were likely not alone.
Yeah.
And there is the possibility that they handed Julian Assange the information. But it's also possible that it came from another source. He denies it came from Russia. I don't know that I trust him and in his statements, but then I don't disbelieve him either. There's just been no proof. And I'll give you a perfect example. We heard from the Washington Post the narrative that Russia had hacked the electric grid. And I, like everyone else, immediately jumped on that. That's something I'm very sensitive to. We watched the infrastructure, particularly the grid, for hacks. Immediately I jumped. And as I dug into what actually happened, it was a laptop of a small utility that was not connected to the electric grid, and there's not even evidence that it was the Russians. It was code that was found on there that is associated with Russian hackers, but could have been used by anyone. But they rushed to judgment. They put out the front page story, Russia's hacked the electric grid, and that was not at all the fact, not at all true. And I believe it was put out there because there's this political narrative, Russia is now hacking and attacking. And that fit the story, the narrative, that Russia had hacked our election, and that they were trying to put Trump in the White House. And now, then, you know, here's how bad the Russians are. They've done this and this and this. And so I believe that there's a lot of the information surrounding the Russian hack of the DNC that has been spun into this narrative that is an attempt to undermine the incoming administration or to create a rift between the incoming administration and the intelligence agencies.
So we got about 30 seconds here before break. Just to sum up, it sounds like they were one of many actors in hacking the DNC, just like we know that there were several state actors trying to hack into Hillary's private server. So that much is known, that they were, in fact, one of those. But whether or not they have actually handed that information out or just gleaned it, we don't know that yet.
We don't know, but there is this whole narrative that's been put out to say that they did do that to cause the American people to distrust the incoming administration.
Okay, let's take a break there. More on the Russians after this with Kevin Freeman. Stay with us.
Hey,
And welcome back to the iSpy Radio Show. Talking today to Kevin Freeman. He is one of the world's leading experts on financial terrorism and economic warfare. And he's the author of a couple of books here, Secret Weapon, How Economic Terrorism Brought Down the U.S. Stock Market and Why It Can Happen Again. And his newest book is Game Plan, How to Protect Yourself from the Coming Cyber Economic Attack. And both of those are up on iSpyRadio.com. Just look for today's show. That is 701. And we were talking about the Russian hacks here, and some of the questioning during Thursday's Senate hearing there, the Director of National Intelligence said, we took no action against the Chinese when they hacked into the Office of Personnel Management, when they stole tens of millions of documents on personnel information. He even said that people who live in glass houses shouldn't throw stones because we don't want them to punish us when we have done that to them and will continue to do that. So isn't that sort of the height of arrogance and hypocrisy if here we've got the Director of National Intelligence saying, yeah, sure, we've hacked other countries' systems and tried to influence their elections?
Well, it may be arrogant, but it's also honest, and it's acknowledged by the government. We have hacked other systems. The question is, have we used the information that we've obtained to try and overthrow a government, to try, you know, how have we used it? And that's a legitimate question. And the fact that we did not respond to the Chinese hacking, which was far more serious than Podesta's email, far more serious. So many employees of the government had their information stolen, and that puts them individually at risk. And we didn't even do anything when we first noticed that Russia may have been in hacking the DNC, and the statement that was made that's extraordinarily, I don't know if arrogance is the right word, but there was the word that, there was the assumption Hillary would win. And so, therefore, we didn't follow up or do anything about it. And that's frightening to me.
That is frightening. But, you know, speaking of hypocrisy, the Democrats have been out there saying how horrifying it was for James Comey to state publicly that he was looking into reopening Hillary's investigation there with the FBI and her whole email scandal. But those Democrats were silent when in October, James Clapper and others issued a public statement saying that they thought the Russians were trying to interfere with our elections. I mean, aren't those both, no matter which side of the aisle you're on, those both of those actions seem like they're politically motivated actions being taken by our intelligence agencies? And is that a proper role for our agencies?
No, I do not believe it's a proper role for the intelligence agencies. This is a very serious concern. I don't think it represents the core of the intelligence community. I think there may be some individual bad actors that need to be called out because they've been highly politicized. And this is something that's gone on for quite some time. There was a move, an outreach by the Russians during the Reagan years to try and undermine President Reagan. And there were outreaches by Senator Kennedy and others that have reached out to, you know, we're going to withhold information, we're going to stop bombings, we're going to do anything we can to get the candidate that we want to be elected to be elected. So this is nothing new. What's new is when the intelligence community is cooperating as a matter of politics, and that's unacceptable.
Well, and it's kind of hypocritical, too, I think, in terms of the role of the media as well. I mean, look at how many times we have been hit by these so-called October surprises. I mean, that is as much of a hack into our election where they've got these secret tapes. You know, they try to do that with Trump. And we see the media doing this. I mean, that is as much of a hack into our system as these outside actors are.
Well, the greatest hack into our system, and I wrote about it in my first book, Secret Weapon, was when outside forces hacked our stock market and economy. And I don't mean by computers only, but computers also. And they caused our stock market to crash immediately preceding an election, where there is a 100% correlation. A collapsing stock market in the waning days of administration guarantees that the party in power loses power. Now, it's not a guarantee the market can go up in the waning days of administration. It did in the Clinton administration, it did in the Obama administration, and the out-of-power party still wins. But if you have a collapse in the stock market right before an election, it changes the party in power. And that's what happened with President Bush, and President Obama came in, and I wrote about this, and the intelligence community and the media covered it up. They didn't want to see the facts that we had that proved that that had happened. So now we're talking about the DNC and Podesta's emails. But where were they in 2008 when we saw it happen?
Yeah, in those cases, the right person won, apparently, according to the media, and that's why they don't want to cover it. But, you know, in terms of the Russians allegedly hacking into our elections, it seems to me some billionaire like Tom Steyer, who was, you know, putting out billions of millions of dollars for sure into our election. You know, here's this California billionaire, and he's trying to influence the elections here in Oregon. He certainly did in a number of other states that he was putting money behind candidates that, that fit his particular agenda. I mean, that is as serious, if not more serious, than these Russians allegedly trying to hack into our politics and trying to have some sort of influence. But how do we then get the politics out of these intelligence agencies? I mean, how do we develop a wall there?
That is going to be a critical job for the incoming administration. That's something that Lieutenant General Mike Flynn, who will be a national security advisor to President Trump, Congressman Pompeo, who will be the head of the CIA, that's something they need to focus on and address early. And they're going to need to look to external expertise in these areas and ask them to be a part of the intelligence advisory boards that serve the president. And they're going to have to find where intelligence is compromised, and they're going to have to root it out. And I think General Flynn is ideal for this. General Flynn, someone I know, I respect highly. He was among the early people testifying in Congress that ISIS was a real threat. There were still threats in the Middle East. The narrative of the White House was bin Laden's dead and Al-Qaeda's on the run. And he was called before Congress and asked what he thought. And he said, well, actually, Al-Qaeda has morphed into other entities like ISIS, and they're very far from dead. In fact, they're quite a threat to the security interests of the United States. And he was called on the carpet by Obama because he violated the administration narrative, and he was forced out, I guess. You know, he was able to serve out a little longer as the head of the Defense Intelligence Agency, but he was clearly on the hit list of the Obama team.
Okay, lots more with Kevin Freeman. We're coming up, we're going to be talking about the next steps for these intelligence agencies. Stay with us. And welcome back to the iSpy Radio Show. We're wrapping things up with Kevin Freeman. He is one of the world's leading experts on economic warfare and financial terrorism. And we've been talking about the Russians and some of the changes that need to happen at our intelligence agencies. And we touched briefly on this going out of the last segment there. Can you give us kind of a broad sense of what sorts of oversights can be set up, some of the mechanisms in order to weed out the politics? I mean, are we talking like some sort of ethics board or some other kind of oversight board that's exterior to those agencies?
Well, there are boards that are established. One is the President's Intelligence Advisory Board. It normally has very prestigious individuals on it. Henry Kissinger has been on that board, for example. Ross Perot was on the board. Recently, Chuck Hagel, our Secretary of Defense, was on the board before he went into the Defense Department. Edward Teller, just really prominent people from walks of life that have the ability to look into the intelligence community. And that's one very important area they report to the president, which means the most important thing is for President Trump to say, I want to know what the facts are, what the truth is. I don't want you to spin it so that it fits my preconceived notions or preconceived narratives. And if he starts from the top, and then good people like General Flynn and Mike Pompeo root out General Mattis, these are the people that will be leading the intelligence efforts. If they will root out those who want to politicize the intelligence, whether for the left or the right, and say, we want to stick with the facts. We don't want you trying to manipulate the American people. That will set the tone and give the opportunity for the good people working in the administration to remove the bad apples.
Yeah. Well, you know, we discussed this issue on your last visit with us in November, but it was clearly the focal point on Thursday's congressional hearings. There was this stunning moment, really, when Director Clapper was saying that there was a lack of policy in response to a cyber attack. And they only have policies that allow detections but not necessarily a response. I mean, that's kind of like having troops on the field of battle and they're armed and ready to go, but their only job is to stand there and point at the enemy whenever they see him rather than actually firing back. I mean, this just seems ridiculously scary and idiotic that we have no policy for response.
It is a very poor policy to not have a prepared response. It is laziness. It is also a disconnect in the current administration because the current administration has been fearful of doing anything. They've allowed Putin to, you know, now they're questioning Putin because it looks like their team did not win the White House. But they're the ones that allowed Putin to get away with all kinds of things, with the Russian reset and so forth. If we'd held his feet to the fire earlier, if we'd addressed the issues more directly, we wouldn't be in the circumstances that we're in now. Same thing with the Chinese. And I think the Trump administration is going to be have responses, and people will be afraid that they'll use them. And that's necessarily good for the national security of our country.
Yeah. Well, looking back at Clapper, he certainly seems to be one of these that is very politically motivated. I'm guessing you're not going to miss him.
Well, when he came out and said that the Muslim Brotherhood is largely a secular group, and there was an enormous amount of intelligence in the United States that said otherwise, it was subsequently purged from the intelligence community, but we have a great deal of evidence otherwise, and the Egyptians have a great deal of evidence otherwise. When you have Muslim nations declaring the Muslim Brotherhood to be a terror group, but the United States calls them largely a humanitarian and secular group, you have a problem. They're anything but secular.
Yeah, they're not only anything but secular. That seems highly misinformed for somebody that ought to be highly informed on the actual motives of the Muslim Brotherhood.
Or it's purposely misleading, which is frightening.
In terms of continuing to look forward here, I mean, there was this 13-page report that came out. It seemed pretty vapid. I mean, they even had this disclaimer that said the Department of Homeland Security does not provide any warranties of any kind regarding any information contained within. I mean, that seems pretty vapid. But in terms of, let's say that the people on this committee were able to get whatever it is that they're trying to get at in terms of a response, what would that response actually look like?
If we found that Russia had hacked into the election, should we do?
Yeah.
You'd begin with a diplomatic response and you could ultimately threaten very serious sanctions. You know, the expulsion of the diplomats may have been a reasonable response if we knew that in fact was the case. The problem is the only absolute fact that we know that was hacked or attempted to be hacked was the Georgia election. In the state of Georgia, in a swing state, and from the best of the evidence we have, it was the Department of Homeland Security that was tied to it. They're more connected to the Georgia hack than we can connect Russia to any hack on actual election day. Not releasing of information that turned out to be factual on candidates, but actual manipulation of the election. The only evidence that we have is an attempt in Georgia that looks like it came from the Department of Homeland Security.
And would there, we got about 30 seconds, and would there be any response to that?
It's been completely ignored. We need an investigation. We want to know what they were doing and what they were looking at, and we need to tell the rest of the world that we have a doctrine. If you hack us, we can respond kinetically, militarily, if we choose, and they need to be afraid that we might do it.
Well, maybe it's time to bomb Homeland Security. So. Kevin, I want to thank you so much for your time today.
Thank you. It's always a pleasure.
All right. Bye-bye. That is all of our time for today, but here's a little something to think about. WikiLeaks has never revealed their sources. They could put all of this to bed by simply this one time naming their source, but they won't. And why not? That tells me that source is still there, still in place. And that's something the Democrats should be worried about. And it might explain why they're pushing this narrative so hard. Check out iSpy Radio, share us on your social media of choice. Help spread the word, because as we say every week, the best information does you no good if you don't use it. Reagan, what do you think?
I do not believe in a fate that will fall on us no matter what we do. I do believe in a fate that will fall on us if we do nothing.
It's more than a show. It's self-defense. The I Spy Radio Show.